Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to Stop Telling Me to Relax. My name is Veronica. I am the host of this podcast. This episode today is featuring a lovely lady. Her name is Elizabeth. She lives over, well, for me, because I'm in America, over in the UK, in an area called Stratford-upon-Avon. It is best well known for being like the area that Shakespeare is from. So I can imagine that it's a very beautiful, very kind of artsy area, but I could be wrong. She can confirm or deny that for me, but I'll toss it over to her.
Okay, so hello, everybody, and thank you, Veronica, for having me. So my name's Liz or Elizabeth from Stratford-upon-Avon. It is a lovely place. It is like living on holiday, so I just love it. You know, we can walk down the river. There's a cute little town. There's a coffee shop. Yeah. Just what you want, really.
Yeah, awesome. Did you grow up in that area or did you move there as an adult?
No, we moved here in lockdown. There was, remember, there was like a break in between the lockdowns. So we originally, I lived in Coventry.
Okay.
It's not a great area. So I moved from there to Stratford because it was just somewhere nicer to go on walks. Stuff, you know, when you could only like have one walk a day, so yeah. You just wanted somewhere nicer to walk around. We moved.
Nice. I find that too, as I get older, I love going on walks every day, and like the area I live in is very walkable, like, you know, trails, yeah. And just things, you know, safe to walk around. But that's very important. Like when you're younger, it's like you want to be around more, like just stuff going on. But now that I'm older, I'm like, I need like peace. I need like.
It's where I am now. It's so, so quiet. Like you can hear your footsteps when you're walking. Wow. It goes, it's lush.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Very cool. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. We kind of already got into it, but you know, where you're from, maybe a little bit of just about like your upbringing, your family, and how life has led you to where you're at now.
Yeah. Okay. So where do I start?
I know, it's such a loaded question.
So I grew up with my mom. She was a single mom for the most part. Like I had stepdads and stuff. I have three younger brothers and sisters. So I have a brother and two sisters. So it was always quite fun, like, you know, growing up and stuff. I had people to, I'd say play with, but we just sort of argued all the time. Yeah. And then sort of like, you know, I went to college. I studied like health and social care. And then from there, I sort of just was drawn to want to support people. So I started working in like looking after adults with dementia and things like that. Yeah, it was really interesting, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to a girl that I worked with, it's like having 20 grandparents.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then sort of from there, I just sort of like, I never really had a purpose for my life. I wasn't really motivated. I just sort of drifted through, bounced around. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered alcohol, like you do in your late teens.
Yes.
Yes. And yeah, it's sort of like my 20s were a blur. And I still sort of had no drive, no sort of end goal, really. And then I met my daughter's dad when I was working in a pub, of course.
Of course.
Of course. Perfect place to meet someone.
Yeah.
We were together for quite a few years before I got pregnant. And I actually, when I was younger, I really wanted to be a mum. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be a great mom and it's what I'm destined to do. Mm-hmm. And then because it didn't happen for such a long time, then I thought, do you know what? Actually, I started telling myself, I don't want to be a mom. I'd rather just, you know, be able to go traveling and do whatever with my job and stuff like that. But I think I told myself that because I didn't think it was going to happen for me. Yeah. So rather than have to deal with that sort of level of, you know, sort of feeling of failure and grief. Mm-hmm. I was just sort of started telling myself, yeah, well, actually, I don't want it anyway, so it's fine.
Right, yeah.
And then to my shock, one day I was, just like making me coffee in the morning. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm late.
Wow.
And I had a pregnancy test like in the bathroom mirror. So I like went and did three. Just to make sure.
Yeah.
And I was like, waiting downstairs for the coffee. I was like, oh, I'll be up in 2 minutes. And then literally, like, I looked at it and it was positive. And I was just like, oh, my God. Wow. And I didn't tell him.
You didn't tell him right then and there? No.
We needed time to process what was, my God. Like, I'm actually going to be a mom now. So I hid the tests and, I didn't tell him. And then I told him that evening. And pregnancy was like, it was quite wild, I guess, in the sense I've always sort of struggled with like my body image and, always wanted to be smaller and I should lose weight and I should look like this, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously in pregnancy, when your body is growing and changing,
It
was that I really, really struggled with that, especially in the early stages when, nobody can really tell that you're pregnant until you get your bump is actually developed. And I was like, oh, crying all the time. People are just going to think I'm fat. They're not going to know I'm pregnant. And so I did struggle with that. But then on the other hand, when I was pregnant, I sort of like romanticized how motherhood was going to be. So I guess maybe I sort of built up my expectations of what kind of mother I would be. And then obviously when I became a mum, it was quite different to what I had imagined. I probably went into it a bit naive. I didn't read any books or, do any courses. So I just sort of thought, well, you get your baby and then you know what to do.
Yeah, that's not it.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's a lot harder than I think it's framed to be. Like just at every stage of motherhood, even pregnancy, like there's so many things that happen during pregnancy that they just don't tell you about and you just learn when you're in it.
Definitely, and when I became a mom, then all of a sudden I remember bringing her home in the car seat and I just put the car seat in the living room and I just locked her and I was like, what do I do now?
Yeah. It's very surreal. Yeah. Like once you're out of the hospital and, because I don't know, when I had my son, like the nurses, they kind of help you with everything when you're there and they're, there to help you and then they're home and it's just you. It's quite a reality check for sure.
It was. I just sort of, just like sat on the sofa and I was like, oh, I need a minute, And then obviously then comes all the exhaustion and you don't sleep, you don't really know when to eat. Like she's crying and I'm trying to comfort her and then she's all right and then I'm like, when am I going to have a shower? When am I going to cook and think? Look at the state of the house. Like it was just like so much to deal with. But I didn't really talk to anybody about it.
So can I ask a couple of questions? When your pregnancy was kind of unexpected, what was your partner at the time? What was his reaction when you did tell him?
He was really excited. He was, So when I told him, he was recovering from a hernia operation at the time.
Okay.
So he was like in bed quite a lot and, in pain and stuff. And I was like, oh, come downstairs. I'm going to do the washing up. Come sit on the stool in the kitchen and talk to me or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd made I've still got the frame somewhere. I've like a photo frame and I'd printed the little baby footprints and put it in a heart and said, coming soon. And I'd put it on the kitchen side and he would sit on this stool and it was next to him and he didn't see it. He didn't see it, so I couldn't. I was like giggling to myself, washing up, trying to just act normal. And then I was like, "Do you notice anything different?" And he was just like looking around, like, "No." And then I said, "Look at that!" And he looked at it for a minute, and then he was like, "Yeah!" Like jumping up and down.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool. So was he supportive during your pregnancy, just emotional support or just kind of being there for everything during
the pregnancy? Yeah, he was really supportive. He worked quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like we had a good time. I guess, like, he didn't really know how to deal with when I was over emotional or over hormonal, because he was just like, obviously he's not going through it, so he just thinks, well, you know, you're pregnant, you are gonna change, your body is gonna change, you're fine. I'll be like, no, I'm not, I look awful.
Yeah, no, men have a hard time because they feel like their body's not experiencing all the changes and all the hormones. And I don't know, in my experience, I think men are very, like, I don't want to use the word rational, but kind of like just very like, it is what it is. Like, this is what's going to happen. Yeah. They don't run off of a ton of emotion when they don't understand, especially with something like pregnancy. It's like, you don't see why I'm so upset or why, I don't know. It's such a challenging experience. Yeah. Yeah. Pregnancy is, it's a trip. It's like very, it's an interesting experience. I don't know how women have, like, you know, there are some women and teach their own, but they, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 kids. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could ever be pregnant and just go through that many times. I don't think I could.
No, when Lemmy, my daughter, when she was like, was still quite a baby, really, I was like, oh yeah, I'd love another one. And now I think, no.
Yeah. I would have loved. Yeah, I would love another one too. But then, you know, the same thing. It's like, it's just a loss. It's so much work. I don't know. I don't know if I want to do it all again, you know?
Yeah. Well, I just think, like, everything you have to go through, it's worth it in the end, obviously. Yeah. But to go through it, and then obviously, like, the age that she is now, she's like a toddler. So she needs a lot of attention.
Yeah.
To bring, like, it wouldn't work, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. Never say never. I wouldn't be able to do it, I don't think. When I see the women and they've got, there's a lady I see in the mornings, actually, when I drop Lemmy to school, and she's got twins, and she's got, I think, another set of twins that are, like, toddler age. Like, how do you cope?
I don't know. It's like, I feel like, when do you sleep? When do you, like, do anything for yourself? I barely have time to do that with one.
Yeah.
Like, four. When do you do that? I couldn't. I would go crazy.
Yeah, I read too.
Yeah. Okay. So to backtrack just a little bit, you had mentioned, you know, going through your 20s and then kind of, like, entering your 30s, you didn't think you were going to have a child and become a mom. Do you feel like there's any correlation between that feeling and maybe some of your substance use and starting to drink really heavily just because you were maybe depressed about it or stressed or worried about it or had some anxiety of whether or not it was going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe. So in my childhood, it was, I'd say, quite a chaotic childhood.
Okay.
And everyone around me sort of, like, the way that I use alcohol, a lot of people around me was the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really learned to, like, drink, you know, just have one drink, that's fine.
Okay.
It was just, you know, I would just keep drinking and drinking until either there was nothing left or I would black out. So neither was a good end result, really.
Yeah.
I think, looking back now, I can see that I just used alcohol to cope, or basically just to not feel or not deal with anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't really have a goal. I didn't have a purpose. I didn't really feel motivated. And there wasn't ever really anything to do. Or maybe that's because I didn't know what I was interested in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just used to go out. Yeah. That was something to do, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously it's sort of like an addictive cycle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I never used to be like, if you'd have told me 10 years ago, I'd be here, like, having a chat with you on the podcast. Like, I would have been like, no way. What, with my camera on and talking?
Right, yeah.
I was so shy and anxious. I didn't have any confidence. And the only way that I felt sort of able to come out of my shell or talk to new people or just even just be myself around other people and new people was to have at least a couple of drinks to get that sort of fake confidence, you know, where you don't really care about what people are thinking or anything like that. So I used alcohol quite a lot, I guess, to deal with everything.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's story with alcohol. It's like a, you know, the icebreaker they need to become super friendly and be comfortable talking to people. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. I think I do want to talk about like your sobriety a little bit later. I know you guys were engaged, so like your ex-fiance and just that relationship pre-baby, pre-pregnancy, what was it like? What was the relationship with him like? Or like could you have predicted that you guys would have been in this place now, not being together? Just kind of everything that has happened since the breakup.
Honestly, no. I actually thought that we would grow old together.
Okay.
I don't know. I could sort of see us, you know, with one, maybe two children. Like, we had chihuahuas as well, two little chihuahuas.
Mm,
no. So, you know, you can just sort of like, you know, when you can picture that little family unit, and I just thought that was that.
Yeah.
But what I didn't, so pre-pregnancy, our relationship, you know, it was good. We had fun. We got on well. We'd always have a laugh with each other. And then obviously, like, it wasn't always roses all the time. Mm-hmm. And like every couple, you know, you have your fallouts and stuff. But we didn't have them very often. But I think because we met in the environment that we met in, we both liked that sort of lifestyle where you go out drinking and, you know, you're out socializing all the time and, you know, that sort of high energy lifestyle.
Yeah.
But actually, it takes its toll on you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you think about like when it was COVID and lockdown and you couldn't go out anymore and socialize that way and drink that way. So then it sort of became, you know, something that we did in the flat where we were at the time, to sort of, you know, I think everybody drank quite a lot more than you would usually in lockdown because there was nothing else to do. And then when we moved to Stratford, everything was still going fine. It was really good. I got pregnant. Obviously, that was like a shock to the both of us. And then it sort of made us maybe reevaluate like our life and the way that we were sort of doing things. Obviously, I couldn't drink anymore. So it was quite a change because, like I said before, when I had a drink and stuff, like I could just chat for England and I didn't really care what I was saying. And I was just like, chatting away. But actually, without the drink, I found like sometimes I'd just be like, don't really know what to say.
Yeah. It's like that social anxiety comes out and
But, you know, even with him, and I'd been with him for a good couple of years by this point, I think we must have been together like 4 years. And then, so, you know, when sometimes I just find I didn't really have much to talk about. And then obviously, like, because I couldn't drink, but he could.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd still have a drink or, you know, we'd go for a meal and he'd have a pint and I'd almost resent his pint. Like, it's so unfair. And obviously, like, he's having a good time chatting to my family or his friends or whatever. And then I think, like, just little seeds started, like, to annoy me. But whether that was pregnancy hormones, I don't really know.
Yeah.
But then, you know, things were really good and I had Lemmy. And I wanted to have a water birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up with a 3-day labor and a C-section.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it was quite full on compared to, you know, what I wanted.
Yeah.
And then I brought her home, obviously. And he didn't even get, it's called paternity leave over here. I don't know if it's the same over there. But he didn't have that. I think he had like 2-3 days and then he went back to work. Wow. And that was it. It was really difficult because where we lived, all my family were about 30 minutes away. And so I didn't have any support close by.
Yeah,
he was working. I'd had a C-section, so it was really difficult. And then obviously because he was working as well, you know, he was like on about he would do some of the sleepless nights. And I was like, well, you can't do that, because his job at the time was driving like plant machinery, you know, for like construction. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if you haven't had any sleep, you can't go and drive a big tractor or bulldozer thing, because it's not safe.
Not safe, yeah.
So, it, you know, it's sort of like he couldn't really help me in any of those ways. I didn't really reach out for support. I didn't ask him or tell him much, because I also thought that if I said it out loud, then it would mean that it was true, that I was failing and that, you know, I did need help. Mm-hmm. So I just kept it to myself. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell him, really.
Did he pick up on it at all? Did he pick up on the fact that you may be struggling? He never brought, or did he bring it up ever? Or
no, I don't ever recall that he did. He's always, and still to this day, you know, says like, what an amazing mum I am.
Oh, that's good.
Which is, you know, it's great. You can't ask for much more.
Yeah.
But when you don't feel that inside,
right?
But no, it was just difficult, you know. Maybe if he had have noticed, it might have prompted me to sort of be like, oh yeah, actually, I don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm failing. I'm messing this up. But I guess because he didn't notice, nobody noticed, and I didn't tell anyone. So
you know, it's hard. Nobody. This is my opinion. Nobody wants to be perceived as like a bad mom or anybody. You don't want anybody else to think you're lacking or you're a bad mother. So you don't. So you don't say anything, just because one, it doesn't feel good to feel the way that to feel that way, and then you don't want anybody else to think you're a bad mom. So it's like you mask, and you just like, at least for me, like I went through that exact same thing where I like went into like double overtime, just trying to handle everything and make sure everything's right, and you know, just to handle everything. But it's draining. It drains you to live like that and to not have to hold it all in. And not, you know, not get to talk to somebody about things.
It was really tough. And then obviously, like, you're still trying to do your housewife a little bit, you know, make sure the house is clean. And, you know, he's been at work all day, so he needs food. And it was just like, my head was just so full of everything going on. It was a really difficult time. And then if I think back to like when I was pregnant and I really romanticized this motherhood and you didn't know what it was going to look like, what it was going to feel like and be like it couldn't be further apart from reality. So it was a real shock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder where that idea that you know, we have as young women before we become moms, where did that romanticized idea come from of what it's going to be like? I don't, because it's nothing like that. And if you talk to any mom, you know, a year or so after having a baby, they're like, this is nothing like I thought it was going to be. I wonder where that came from.
Right now, I'm going to have a guess that it's in, you know, it's in quite a lot of films.
That's true.
You know, not like rom-coms like EastEnders and stuff, because they show maybe more reality stuff, but you know, like the big blockbuster films, a lot of motherhood stuff, it is all like fancy and sparkly and magical. You know, you don't see the mom crying on the floor with the baby screaming and the washing's all piled up, because that doesn't make a good film.
Yeah, that's not pretty to look at.
No.
Yeah, you're right. So you mentioned, you know, you became pregnant, and as you were moving through your pregnancy, obviously you're no longer drinking or kind of partying or going out at all or as much.
Yeah.
Did you develop any resentment towards your fiance because like he could still do those things and you couldn't? And I don't know. I just know for me, being in a very similar situation, once I was pregnant and I couldn't, my priorities were just different. And I didn't really want to, you know, obviously I couldn't drink and I couldn't really go out and to bars and things and socialize. It changed my view of my partner, because I'm like, why do you think this is important? Like, we're getting ready to have a baby.
And I'd be like, just sort of, you know, hanging around the house waiting for him to come home from work. And then he'd be like, oh, I'm just going to pop for a pint with the lads after work, you know, the work lads. And then I'd be like, instantly. Maybe I'd have been in an all right mood, but then that text and I'd be like, what? So I'm just supposed to sort of like, I'd never say any of this to him, but I'd just be like, thinking, so I've just got to sit here. Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, like a little mardy teenager. So, but yeah, I did really start to resent that, you know, obviously my life had to change, mm-hmm. obviously, because I wanted a healthy pregnancy and I wanted to look after my baby, you know, so you have to make those changes. But I felt like it was unfair that he didn't have to make those changes. He could carry on, you know, as normal.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do anything different. And he was really into his motorbiking. So he had a Harley Davidson. And, you know, obviously in the summer, it's like peak season for going out on your bike because the weather's great.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, I think it was like a weekend, like a Saturday or a Sunday. And the weather, it was amazing weather. And we didn't really have any plans. And he was like, I think I'm going to take the bike out. And I was just like, thinking that's my day ruined. And I was just, and then just once I'd got into that mind, into that sort of mindset of like, it's so unfair. Then every time he did something, like, you know, he went out for a drink or, you know, even if he just had a drink in the garden, I'd just be like, can't we do anything else?
Yeah.
Do something else.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I really did grow to sort of resent that sort of side in the pregnancy because I just felt like it was unfair. And if I had to change my life so much, why didn't anybody else?
Yeah. I think I know everybody every mother I know has had that exact same thought. It's like, you know, like motherhood or parenthood is sacrificial and that's what it is. But as the mom, I feel like you make the biggest sacrifice out of, you know, the two with you and your partner. Or, I don't know. It's tough reality to grasp. Yeah.
And I think in the beginning, like when you get that positive pregnancy test, you find out you're pregnant, like you don't think about everything else that's going to happen or change or follow along.
Mm-hmm.
So then when it comes up, like you don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally experienced that. I was younger, like young, 24 and I had my son and I never thought, you know how, like, I don't know, like I still wanted to like go to school to go like get my master's degree. Right. And so I remember thinking like, I can still do that and it'll be easy. And like, I can still go to school. I can still do all the things I want to do with my life, or I'll still have time to just do things, just like normal, you know, 20 something. I don't know why it never grasped for me that like everything was going to be harder to get done or things were like that I wouldn't have the time. I thought like, I'm going to have this baby. Like, it'll be fun. You know, I don't know. It's just, it's a tough reality to realize like your life is really completely changing and you just don't have the same time or opportunities like you did before you had the baby.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Even, you know, when she was a baby and stuff, and even just silly things like, you know, he could come in and he'd be like, I'm just going to go get a haircut. And I'd think, I'd like to just walk in and then say, I'm just going to go out and do this.
Yeah.
But you can't do that as the mom because you have the baby. Mm-hmm. You can't just, I'm just going to go and do this. No, you don't have that choice or that option.
No, everything has to be like, you don't have that luxury. Everything has to be kind of like planned. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to go do something, you know, plan it around their schedule, what they're doing. And it's just, it's very, it's very sacrificial.
In 6 weeks at 2 o'clock, can I have 2 hours?
Right. Yeah, it sounds like just saying it like sounds so ridiculous to think that, but that's how it is. Like that's how it is. Like you don't have, you know, you just don't have the same capacity to get things done and do the things you need to do. It's wild.
No, it was a luxury just to have a shower and wash your hair without the baby outside the shower door.
Yeah, yeah. And it shouldn't be that way. Even like with basic things like taking a shower, like, it shouldn't be that way. It's just so frustrating that, you know, like I said, how sacrificial it all is. As much as you want to share about how your relationship ended with your ex-fiance and what that experience was like ending that relationship.
Okay, so Lemmy, my daughter, she was a terrible sleeper. I just got the baby that didn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like the only time that she would sleep was in the day. We'd like contact nap. Like it was like a running joke, I think. Well, I wasn't in on the joke. You know, like when people say, like make a comment and then you think, oh, God's sake. Like, but they always used to say, you know, you can put the baby down.
Yeah.
And think, I want to put my baby down.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, you know, when she would have her naps in the day, I would sit with her on the sofa and, you know, she'd have a nap, I'd have a little doze.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that was it. That's what we did. So her sleep in the nighttime, it was terrible. She was up. I remember one night I was up like 17 times. It was ridiculous. Yeah, like crazy.
Yeah.
I was just exhausted and she never slept. It was really difficult. And I tried everything. I tried sleep routines. I tried sleep training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the chair method where you sort of gradually go to the door.
Mm-hmm.
I tried putting her on a bump, putting her down gently, having white noise.
Yeah, all the tricks.
Like everything. I tried it all. And I thought, oh my God, I've cracked it. She can have a warm bath with some lavender oils, like, you know, in the steam. And then she can have a meal, we'll do a bedtime routine and she'll sleep all night. So we just sort of became co-sleepers, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Going from sleeping in the bed with her dad and us all in the same room and then her not sleeping, I gradually just sort of moved into her room.
Yeah.
And then rather than coming back to bed, I would just stay there in her room because the seconds that I come away, she, within half an hour, she'd be awake again.
Yeah.
So I moved into her room essentially. And I think that was probably the sort of beginning of us like drifting apart, obviously, because you don't have that time together.
Yeah.
And I was just always in the daytime, obviously, I'm all about her needs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's at work and then he comes in, you know, we'd have his dinner or whatever. We'd have like a little family time. And then it wouldn't be too long from when he's in, we've had dinner and then it's time for her to be going to bed because she can't stay up too late. So we were just, I guess, sort of not getting the time that we needed together.
Yeah.
I guess initially started the downfall and then yeah we just sort of like obviously we still have our good times and the weekends were good and we still had fun and we had nice family days and family times together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just obviously it went too far that we couldn't come back from it.
Yeah.
And in the end we weren't even really arguing all the time. It was just like We just couldn't get on. We couldn't agree. Like there was just friction all the time.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we sort of, it was amicable. You know, we made the decision that actually the best thing going forward for all three of us is that we separate.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. And now Lemmy has two houses, obviously. So she goes to her dad's and she lives with me. And she quite enjoys it, I think, because obviously she can play us off against each other.
Yes.
So
my son does too.
She is only three, but I know, like, she'll say to her dad, yeah, I can have that. So he'll be like, okay, then. And then, you know, we'll be chatting on the phone and he'll be like, oh, can she have this? Not really. And then he's like,
they're smart. They know what they're doing. They're smart cookies. Yeah.
She knows exactly. But yeah, we're like, we get on great now. And, you know, Lemmy can see that we're friends and, you know, we actually have time, you know, when he picks her up, we'll sit and have a coffee. Sometimes they'll make us food and whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's just, it's a shame, obviously, because it's not the sort of reality that we envisioned in the beginning.
Yeah.
But actually, it's worked out for the best for all three of us.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. How would you rate, well, you kind of just said you guys get along. Do you rate your co-parenting relationship from like 1 to 10, with 1 being the worst, 10 being like it's perfect, it's great? Where do you think you guys are at?
I'd say probably like maybe an 8 or 9, you know, mm-hmm. like we co-parent pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite difficult sometimes trying to get around. Obviously, he works and I work, and then she has her days where she's at preschool. So it's just trying to find who's going to have what time so that nobody misses out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of, it's just trying to be fair and to make sure everybody feels like they're getting the right time and what they deserve, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But Lemmy knows that if she wants to go to her dad's, she can go to her dad's. If she wants to come home, she can come home. Like, you know, we're very supportive. You know, we get on great.
Good. That's awesome.
Same, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you were, like, you moved out of the home you shared with him, and you were really on your own, what was the biggest thing, I guess, maybe you were surprised about single motherhood? Like something that you didn't even think you would experience or think about, and then once you were settled into that role, you know, you're like, oh, whoa, this is shocking, or I didn't think about this. Was there anything like that you experienced?
I guess one thing that I have found really tricky, obviously being a single mom, is when she's a toddler, she brings home the sickness bugs from preschool
mm-hmm.
very often. And when she's ill, there's nobody else here.
Yeah.
I can't say, oh, you know, can you do today and I'll do tomorrow? So there's no one to share that with. So then when I'm having to, you know, ring into work and be like, oh, I can't work today, probably not tomorrow either because my daughter's not well. And then my family and everybody else, there isn't anybody nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a support network. It is me and it's her.
Yeah.
So that's something that I have found really, really difficult. And last winter, I think I had like maybe 5 periods where she was unwell and I couldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually got to the point where my work were like, you can't keep doing this. And I was like, well, I'm a single mom.
Yeah. I can't help your child from getting sick. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really difficult. And then obviously you go from having 2 incomes coming into your house to 1 income. So that's been quite difficult as well. And sometimes like I think I feel guilty that I want to, you know, we'll go down the shop or something. And she's absolutely fascinated with the, you know, the magazines. She mm-hmm. wants a magazine all the time.
Yeah.
She's like, magazine. Like, oh, I don't have the money for a magazine. Every time that we go to a shop, they're like, what, like £8-9? Like, I don't have that just, you know, to keep being.
Just like, throw around,
The magazine, have the magazine, it's fine. So things like that are quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it really. Yeah. My mom, she was a single mom. She was quite independent. You know, she would do like the little DIY jobs and stuff around the house and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've done all that myself for this house as well. So I think I obviously must have got that from her.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like I need to rely on anyone, which is nice. And I quite like my freedom. I am quite independent anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Just little things sometimes when you think, but you know, it's just me. To share it with.
Yeah. I think it's hard when you're like your child's sick and you have really nobody else to kind of lean on in the home. And I hate that. Like the biggest thing for me is what I really feel like is hard as a single parent is like living in a world not set up to support you, like your job being like, you can't keep calling out so many times, and you're, you know, and it's like, I'm a single parent, my child is sick, there's nobody else really to lean on. You know, it's like you can't lose your job. Obviously you need your job, but you know, what are you gonna do? It's like those are the things that make it hard for me. Or like, you know, we just don't live in a world, I feel like, that really supports like the lifestyle, you know, when things get rough. Yeah.
It doesn't. And another thing, I think sometimes, like, I'll take her, you know, to a soft play or to the park, or, you know, we'll go somewhere where there's lots of families and other children and stuff. And then because it's just me and her, I feel like when everybody looks at me, they're like, she's a single mom.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't know that her dad, but I could still be with her dad, and he could just be at work, just mom and daughter day out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I sort of I feel the stereotype sometimes. And
in
the beginning, it was quite hard to not let that sort of dictate and take over.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to sort of work on that a little bit and be like, do you know what, actually, yeah, I am a single mom, but I'm a brilliant mom and I don't need anyone else.
Yeah.
She's got what she needs and she's happy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's really all that matters. Yeah. I've also learned too, you know, not that everybody that's like married or in a relationship is not happy, but there's usually, I have found that some of the women in particular, other moms that are kind of the most critical or judgy of you being a single parent or not really happy in their relationships. And maybe they wish they could separate from their partner, but then maybe they don't have the courage to do it right now, or finances don't allow it or something. So I've really learned to, like, because I have felt that so much. Like, I've been shamed by other like married moms at my son's schools, and it's been a lot. I realized, like, really, if I was a married woman with a partner and a kids, and I was very happy and secure in my marriage, I wouldn't be hating on like a single parent, you know? So it's something kind of maybe going on around them for them to treat you that way.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what I've learned. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk, I guess, a little bit about, let's go back to talking about sobriety. And you have been, I don't know if you would call it recovery or active recovery or I'm not sure kind of what you label it, but you've been not drinking, and I don't know if you used any substances or drugs, but you've been sober for a while. So let's just talk about that, like why you decided to get sober besides being pregnant, and what that experience has been like for you being a sober mom and not drinking, because I know over here, like mommy wine culture is huge. Having to drink, you know, drinking at night when kids are asleep or whatever. Well, so what has that been like for you being sober?
Okay, so it's been, initially I thought it would be quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I breastfed Lemmy when she was born. My goal, I wanted to breastfeed her for like 6 months to a year.
Okay.
But I, like, physically, I just didn't have the milk to be able to do that. So I think I managed to get to I think I got to 5 months or something, like quite.
That's pretty good.
You know, that's where I got to. That was with formula as well. So it wasn't just breast milk, because my body couldn't do that. So when she was about 6 months old, it was my mum's 50th birthday. So up until that point, from like birth to 6 months, I probably had like the odd drink, you know, like in the evening, mm-hmm. you know, her dad's home and we're having dinner and we were like, just have a little drink. And you know, that was okay. And then it was my mum's 50th when she was 6 months old, and we took her to my mum's party. And we were just drinking, and it's almost like I forgot that I had a baby to look after, because I guess the alcohol hit me to the point where I was just like really merry, happy, dancing, chatting away to everybody. And then before I knew it was like 11 o'clock, we were in a taxi going home with the baby in the car seat, you know. And then I got home and I put her on the bed and she was crying, and I was like, and then I just burst into tears and I was like, I'm really drunk, I can't do this. Yeah. Oh my God. Such a realization moment. And, you know, I probably drank I took it too far. And that was my own fault. Obviously, you know, she was fine and I managed to get her down and sort her out, and that was all great. And the next day I felt absolutely dreadful, not just from the hangover, but just, I was just, almost in like the horrors. I was like, you know, anything could have happened.
Yeah.
You know, that was absolutely stupid behavior.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was really angry at myself and disappointed. And I was like, no, I can't do that again. So then I tried to do like the moderation thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so if we were going out somewhere, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll just have one. And I won't go over the one. So I did that for a little bit. And then I think for a couple of months, I tried to do the just one drink thing, you know, which was fine. But it didn't meet my needs for what I used alcohol for, if you like. So, you know, I was just like, why am I having this one drink if it doesn't do anything? It's just a fizzy drink. It tastes all right. But it's not meeting that need that I sort of want, or I'm not getting the feeling that I want.
Yeah.
But I can't trust myself to have more than just one because I don't know when to stop. So I think, you know, people started popping them up on my Instagram. Again, my phone is listening in.
Yeah. You mean like sobriety? People talking about sobriety?
Yeah, people start like, there's, I think she's called Sober Mom.
Okay.
And I think she is actually from America somewhere. But yeah, she started popping up like quite regularly. So I started following her, you know, and she talks about, you know, the change in her life, being a mom sober to, you know, not going into wine mom culture and all of that. And I was really intrigued and sort of fascinated by it. And I thought, well, maybe I could do that too. And so I made a decision to some date in August. I can't remember exactly when. And I was just like, I'm not going to drink after today. Like, not at all. Not even just one. And I thought, there's no point. If I can't have one and I don't get the feeling that I'm chasing, there's no point. Like, for all the side effects and the health issues that could come with drinking alcohol regularly and all of that, what is the point? You know, one drink just because it tastes nice.
Right.
I can make myself a nice mocktail, or you know, just have water in a fancy glass like I do now.
So
I didn't actually initially, I didn't tell anybody that I'd decided to go sober. I just did it. And I downloaded an app. No idea, can't remember what it's called now, something sober. But it would give you like a notification every day, with, you know, like a prompt, you know, so it would tell you how long you'd been sober for, and then it would give you like a motivational quote for your day or something, you know, to like spur you on. So I actually found that really useful because it's like 2 days now. Now it's 3 days. Now it's a week.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, I've got to a week, so I can't break that. And then you get little badges for like sobriety as you go along. And so, yeah. And then I think I got to about a year.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I'm going to keep going. And then I am. I just haven't stopped. But I have found this Christmas, not difficult, but I have had a few thoughts where I've been like, you know, especially when she's at her dad's, I've been thinking, well, I know, maybe I could just have a drink.
Yeah.
And it's like popping into my head. I'm thinking, well, it's all right because she's not here. And then I think, but then you're going to undo all of your hard work.
Yeah.
And I just want to think back to like, you know, how I used to feel when I was drinking, you know, how I'd feel the next day with the anxiety and all of that. And yeah, I don't want to get back into that sort of behavior. So, you know.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's wonderful. Have you done any kind of like a structured group like AA or anything? Or is it just kind of all on your own with the help of just some apps and like social media content and stuff like that?
Yeah. Just on my own. Like, you know, I don't think that I was at the stage where I needed groups and, you know, that sort of level of support. I was quite happy to not have a drink. It was just about changing the habit because I'd done it for such a long time. It was just habit to cooking dinner, I'll have a drink. Or I'm going to, you know, sit in the garden because it's sunny, I'll have a drink. We're going to go here. What do you want to drink? What am I going to have to drink sort of thing? It would just become part of my daily habits, my daily culture. So, you know, to try and break that habit after I'd done it for so many years, it was quite difficult initially. But then once I started to see the benefits, I was just like, yeah, I'm not really bothered.
Wow, that's amazing. You have great willpower. What advice would you give to a mom who is thinking about sobriety, becoming sober? Do you have any tips or tricks to help reverse those habits? of picking up a drink, or, you know, like any coping skills that you use to avoid drinking?
Yeah. So initially, obviously, the app really helped me because it gave me something to sort of track my progress. It was a visual, if you like. You know, I guess that's the way that I am. I am quite visual. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be an app on your phone. Just tick it up on your calendar or something, mm-hmm. you know. When you look at how many, you see your ticks adding up, I've done this many days, then it's like, well, if I go back and drink now, then all of those ticks, yeah. they don't count.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you can see it, it makes such a difference. And what else did I do? I unfollowed, you know, people who made content where that would be triggering.
Yeah.
You know, if I see my friends on nights out or stuff, you know, I would mute the content or, mm-hmm. you know, ask like not to see this sort of content.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so curate your Instagram feed or your social media feed to show you things that you want to see.
Yeah.
Think about your triggers. So my triggers would be things like family occasions. You know, when you go for a family meal for someone's birthday or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or say like Christmas time, or, you know, if you're going somewhere where, you know, other people are going to be drinking, but you don't really want to. So I started to have, what was it called? I think it was called Three Spirit, but it's basically like a non-alcoholic spirit.
Okay.
Before they become like quite mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have like non-alcoholic options, and I'd make sure that I would have my options. If I wanted to have a drink, you know, they're quite all right. They taste quite nice. And sometimes they are quite helpful. They just, it's having that drink.
Yeah, that's something in your hand. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I guess that's sort of just how I got around it, really, is just mm-hmm. trying to be more organized about it rather yeah. than just being, finding myself in that situation and then thinking, oh no, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Sort of just try and plan ahead. And then just keep reminding yourself why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So my reason was obviously my daughter, which you can't get anything bigger motivating you than that.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's
it sounds like a lot of it is mental, really. Just, you know, reframing thoughts in your head and,
yeah.
you know, getting into different habits, prompting yourself to do something different. It sounds like it's just all mental, really. A lot of it is mental.
It was for me, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I've never been a big like I've been kind of like you, just like social drinker, and but just never really been big on it. And even now, like, I barely drink. I don't know. It doesn't make me feel good. And I'm like, why do I want to do something that doesn't make me feel good? And
exactly.
Yeah. And I have so much to do during the day. I'm like, I can't drink the night before and not feel good enough to get all that stuff done. I don't know. I think alcohol is very overrated. I don't know. I don't
definitely
understand it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, what are your hopes for your future? I know, you know, you are on social media and you are starting up like a parenting coaching business. At least just explain the hopes for your future and for your coaching business, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So I am a life coach for mums. So I help overwhelmed mums basically come out of survival mode and come into their calm, confident, and in control self.
Nice.
So when I was back in the motherhood trenches of overwhelm and being exhausted, you've got the mum guilt and the self-doubt and the anxiety and all of that, like burying you down. You know, I managed to get myself to a place today where I am very confident in the mother that I am. I am calm. I don't really snap at Lemmy. You know, and I'm getting to be the mother that I romanticized during pregnancy.
Yeah.
But it's took quite a lot of work to get to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my mission with my life coaching, is I want to help mums who are where I was, because I don't think anyone should have to go through their motherhood experience that way.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have to feel like that, and it doesn't have to. So I just help mums, you know, sort of get over and deal with their nervous system regulation. You know, we go into boundaries. We look at their self-limiting beliefs, what's holding them back, and reoccurring sort of fears or things that might come up that, you know, you try and break a behavior or a thought cycle or a belief that actually your brain self-sabotages, you know, things that you're trying to change because that's its safety, that's familiar, and whatever is familiar for you is your baseline, it's your safety. So when you're trying to come out of that and sort of change things, your body's like, oh no, this is scary, go back.
Yeah.
So my goal for 2026 really is to build my coaching up to the point where I can leave my part-time job. Mm-hmm. So at the minute, I also work part-time supporting parents and children with emotion regulation, sort of anxiety, behavior, sleep, and that sort of stuff.
Wonderful.
It is a really good job. You know, I do really enjoy it. But I'm just, I don't know, you know, you sort of feel a bit held back by, you know, there's only so much I can do because I work for that company and, you know, we have to follow what they're doing.
Right.
But actually, I'm more qualified than the role that I'm in.
Yeah.
There isn't really anywhere else for me to go there.
Right.
So, do you know what? I'll create my own and I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the world is my oyster.
Yeah, absolutely. I find having an outlet, like for me, it's this podcast, or for you, it's, you know, doing independently parent coaching.
Yeah.
It's kind of freeing because, I mean, of course we have jobs and because we have to provide financially, but like just being able to run your own show and run things how you want, it's just very fulfilling. It's very, for me, at least, it's just very fulfilling to be able to kind of sort of take your knowledge and experience and something that you have and put it out there kind of on your own terms. I find it very fulfilling for me personally, like as just as a human being, as a woman, like just to, you know, no kind of no guidelines, restrictions, rules, because that's how it is with a job, with a company. You can just put your stuff out there. I think that's something I'd recommend for every woman, every mom, especially single mom, because there's so much on our shoulders alone. Like, have an outlet, doing something you enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, just to, and do whatever, you can do whatever you want with it. I think it's helpful for your mental health. For me, it is.
Yeah, definitely. So I have two Instagrams. So I have obviously my coaching one where I sort of help mothers who, you know, they're overloaded, they're sort of drowning in the overwhelm and stuff. So I help them get back to where they want to be.
Awesome.
And then my other Instagram is more personal. So I'd say that's probably like my outlet is, I guess, being creative. I am really creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy things like that. So being able to create the two different types of content, you know, my other one is more, a bit more personal, maybe more lifestyle. I just sort of share random stuff on there. So one day you might look and I'm like, hey, look, I like this stuff. and, you know, the next day it might be like, we're walking around a park or we're on an adventure or something.
Right. Yeah.
I just think it's nice for, you know, other moms to see normal motherhood rather than the sort of influencer motherhood where everything looks perfect like it does in the films. And then, you know, when you become a mom, you're not going to expect that big magical motherhood because you're going to know that actually you can still have all that, but it's going to come with a side of perhaps overwhelm and mum guilt, and some days are going to be really tough.
Yeah.
And some moments are going to make you really question, what am I doing?
Yes, yeah.
Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
But it's all worth it in the end. But to be able to see both perspectives gives another mum, obviously, hopefully, a sense of hope and, you know, that feeling that you're not the only one.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think, you know, the balance of reality versus what we all thought motherhood, you know, I think that's the beauty of like social media, being able to connect with other moms who we've all had similar experiences all, you know, all across the world. I mean, you're in another country than I am and we can relate on this topic. So that just having that space to connect is important and put it out there for other moms to see is so important. So you just feel so, you know, you feel hopefully helping others feel less alone, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, wonderful. Thank you. Do you have any closing thoughts you want to say? Maybe.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Elizabeth Catherine Monroe and at The Liz Fluence. So obviously the Elizabeth Catherine one, that's my coaching where you can come for support. And then the other one is more my random stuff that I like to post.
Right, yeah. Yeah, go follow her. She has some really wonderful shorts. They're always just visually brilliant, like colorful and really pretty and then awesome advice too. So I definitely recommend a follow. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. It's such a pleasure to meet women from all over who, like I've said, I can connect with and meet and become friends. And if I'm ever in that area, I'm definitely going to hit you up. Yeah. I've never been to the UK, so I'm looking forward to one day traveling there for sure.
You should do it. And I've never been to America, so, you know, we got a swap.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be so fun. Yeah. Thank you so much.